Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, November 23rd, 2017. The influx of South Sudanese refugees to Uganda poses a potential conflict.
So in Uganda, in the areas which host refugees, there's no question that there are issues with the local communities. There are competing demands for water, for land. These are real problems. These are not necessarily long-term, sustainable, good things for the people that live there.
And South Sudanese female police officers learn additional skills to do their job better.
These women of South Sudan, now they can write. They can even go to the office, write a report. They can speak English with the knowledge that they got from Kampala University. They should not keep this woman redundant in the offices. They should be given the table and the chair to do the work.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some traditional chiefs meeting in Juba are discussing how to reduce the widespread of practice of child marriages, which they say contribute to the high rate of maternal mortality in South Sudan. The chiefs say the ongoing conflict and economic crisis in South Sudan has increased the practice. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
More than Sigisi chiefs from across the country are gathered here in the capital to try to figure ways to end child marriages, which are rooted in traditional practices and norms. The UN Population Fund and the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, which organized today's meeting, say child marriages happen mainly in rural areas. They say getting chiefs involved is the best way to minimize the practice. The meeting is being organized as part of the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. In South Sudan, girls as young as 13 are married off in most cases to older men because parents expect to get bride wells in the form of keto, which is nearly the same as currency in many parts of the country. Mary Nyachel, a paramount chief of Lech in Pangaki State, says the economic crisis has made things worse for girls. Nyachel says the problem is parents often make decisions for their underage daughters. She says the father has the right to do so because families receive cows in exchange for marrying off their daughters. And if the father decides to give his daughter away in marriage, it is usually done in the absence of paramount chiefs, like herself. She says chiefs only hear complaints after the girl is married off. Nyachel says if they learn the father has forced the daughter to marry, chiefs can sentence the father to 6 months in prison. Nyachel says in her Nweri community, marrying a young girl attracts up to 150 heads of cattle as dowry, a practice that encourages girl-child marriages. She says chiefs in the Nweri community are advocating for a reduction in the number of cattle for dowry. Nyachel says the Nweri community is now sitting down to make sure they reduce child marriages and return to the previous culture such as before, when a tall girl could be married with 40 cows and a short one with 30. Dao Chan Mayuel, the Reng paramount chief, says changing cultural practices like child marriages is challenging. Speaking in Arabic, Mayuel says chiefs have no power to decide at what age parents should marry off their daughters, but parents must be educated about the dangers of girl-child marriages.
We are still marrying with cows up to now, and this has not changed as we still keep traditional practices. And if there is something to be changed in that culture, we consult elders, and those things that cannot be changed, we leave it as it is.
Two girls named Ehore and Christine say chiefs and community leaders must protect girls from early marriages.
It is destroying mostly our ladies, and they're not finished their education earlier, and even they cannot develop themselves.
We have very many problems, like when a girl got married very early. A girl sometimes cannot also want to drop out from school. That is one of the challenges. And also sometimes when also a girl is female, also, that girl will also face more difficulty when in time of what giving birth.
John Deng Garang, the executive chief of Urol, says many in his community do not see marrying off underage girls as a problem. Speaking in Arabic, Garang says chiefs agreed at today's meeting to monitor and sensitize their communities to the dangers of child marriages and other abuses.
Nobody will come to report that my child was married at early age, but we are encouraging the girls should be married off when they are 18 and above. And if the girl doesn't want the husband, she should not be forced.
UN gender specialist Viola Riak says nearly half of all gender-based violence happens to underage girls, mostly in the form of early or forced marriages. Riak says getting chiefs involved in the campaign against girl-child marriage can make a big difference.
Child marriage is a big concern in South Sudan. At the moment, we have a prevalent of 45% of girls below the age of 18 getting married. The reason why we're targeting chiefs today, because we know marriage are connected with the communities. They are connected with the beliefs and the social norms of our society. You cannot differentiate marriage and the way our society live. Because every time when we refer to marriages, they all go back to the chiefs.
Riak says half of gender-based violence reported this year involving intimate partner violence involved men not being able to provide for their families. Venetia Charles Lado, Commissioner of South Sudan's Human Rights Commission, says the fight to end sexual violence must begin from the grassroots level.
During our discussions, they will know the harmful or the effects that affect early marriages or the effect that resulted from lack of education. And because they are the one handling these issues, we need them here. We are not going, of course, we are not going to enforce them, but we will be discussing. While we are discussing, we will be telling them exactly how is it harming us, how is it, you know, retarding our development as a nation. So little by little, I think they will understand.
United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, says South Sudan has the highest number of maternal mortality rate in the world, caused in large part by teenage pregnancy and girl-child marriages. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
This past year, the number of South Sudanese refugees reached a 500,000 mark. Ethiopia now hosts more than 400,000 refugees, while more than 100,000 South Sudanese are taking refuge in Kenya. In Uganda, 1 million South Sudanese crossed the border this year. Ali Vaji is a visiting expert at the U.S. Institute of Peace and a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute. He explains to Ayen Bior why one of Africa's fastest-growing refugee crises has not sparked meaningful action from regional governments.
No matter how dire the refugee crisis in South Sudan might be, and there's no question it's a crisis, that has not resulted in a shift in the political posture of East African states, the neighboring states of South Sudan.
But isn't hosting refugees a burden? I mean, what are the incentives for a government to host refugees? Some would argue that doing so poses a burden with very little benefits. So as we have Uganda hosting 1 million South Sudanese, wouldn't the government look at that and say, this could potentially be an issue for us? Let's try to help South Sudan get back on the right track.
There's no question that hosting refugees is an issue. The question is whether that issue is sufficient to provoke or require a hosting state like Uganda to intervene usefully to resolve the conflict. Uganda is a good example. Of course, there are more South Sudanese refugees in Uganda than anywhere else. There are now roughly 1 million or over 1 million refugees. And by the logic of saying that having a refugee presence will change the dynamics on the ground, that change should already be occurring. We can go back a year to when there were many fewer refugees in Uganda and indeed in all of the other neighboring countries. And yet there hasn't been the resultant sort of change. So in Uganda, in the areas which host refugees, there's no question that there are issues with the local communities. There are competing demands for water, for land. These are real problems. These are not necessarily long-term, sustainable, good things for the people that live there. But northern Uganda is also very far away from the power politics of Kampala and of the presidency, where these decisions ultimately get made.
Let's look at the global context real quick. How has mass migration movements through Europe, the Middle East, and North Africa reconfigured, as you term it, global politics in a way that South Sudan's refugee crisis has not?
Well, there are several examples of this. Let's take the Syrian outflow of refugees from that country, many of whom ended up trying to cross to Turkey and then into Europe through Greece and other routes. Or take the Libyan refugee crisis through North Africa and then across the Mediterranean. Those refugee flows were seen as national security threats to not only European countries, but also to the countries in the immediate region. So again, to go back to Syria, Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon have all had destabilizing effects as a result of those flows. We're not seeing the same sort of change as a result of the South Sudanese population for different reasons in different states. It's not the same reason in all of the host countries, but the phenomenon is different. And I just want to make the point that having the comparison, because it is very easy to compare, as you say, this South Sudanese movement to the broader flow of refugees and other crises in other parts of the world, it isn't the same. It hasn't resulted in the same sort of political change.
One of the subheadlines reads, quote, "Why the Refugees Don't Matter." That is a provocative headline, but is there truth to it?
Well, they don't matter in the sense of influencing political behavior of the states. Of course, refugees matter. The point I'm arguing is that in terms of the presence, the mere presence of South Sudanese refugees in Kenya, in Uganda, in Sudan, in Ethiopia, doesn't matter to the political calculations that those states make vis-a-vis South Sudan. That's the point. Of course, for common humanity, for all of the other implications that are resulting from the fact that refugees are there, they do, but unfortunately for political reasons, they don't.
That was Ali Vaji, visiting expert at the United States Institute of Peace and a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute. He was speaking to Ian Bior from Washington. A class of 100 female police officers and correctional forces graduated today from a six-month course in English literacy and computer science provided by the UN Development Programme. A police official say the new cadets will contribute to narrowing the gender gap in South Sudan's National Police Service. Manyang David Mayar attended the graduation ceremony and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Ululating and cheering rose up from Kampala University's Juba Study Center when female police officers and prison guards received their certificates. Andrew Shiruma, team leader for UNDP's Democratic Governance Campaign, says the training is aimed at enhancing the capacity of the rule of law institutions in South Sudan.
This training is really to enhance the capacity of the rule of law institutions in the Republic of South Sudan. I think one of the major challenges that we have in South Sudan has been the issue of English language. You notice a majority of our labor force in South Sudan are educated in Arabic language, and they got the education mainly in Khartoum and other northern universities. So there is a big challenge in terms of really strengthening the language that the Republic of Southern Sudan declared as the official language of the country.
Graduates like Betty Bennett say they are optimistic that their newly acquired skills will help them perform the types of jobs typically reserved for men in South Sudan.
Women of this country, they are really being oppressed. They always say to the organization out there who wanted to help women that those women are not educated. Those women cannot do anything. Those women only are women for making tea and cleaning. But let me assure you today that the world, that these women of South Sudan, now they can write, they can even go to the office, write a report, they can speak English, with the knowledge that they got from Kampala University. They should not keep this woman redundant in the offices. They should be given the table and the chair to do the work. They should be given assignments to do, like other men who are doing assignments in the offices.
Speaking in Arabic, General Said Shaul, South Sudan Inspector General of Police, vowed to make sure that more South Sudanese women are trained.
I want your numbers to be increased, and I also want that this course does not just stop from here and must be advanced, because you have the power and you are the majority. And because you are the majority, you must be educated so that you can serve in the army, in the police, and in judiciary.
South Sudan Chief Justice Chanrej Madut says negative customary practices that have hindered women from developing their careers in the past must end.
We need to revisit our customs to see those bad customs, we abandon them. For example, some people would not be inclined to take their daughters to school, simply leaving them to hang around in the village so that they are married off. This thing should be discouraged by all means.
Justice Madut says, once government institutions and local traditional leaders address the obstacles to girls' education, more girls will enroll and stay in school. And as a result, more women will contribute to the development of the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at teachers in Bor. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you keep your shoes clean during rainy season?
I'm always careful when I'm moving around, because you find that even it's not always during rainy season that the shoes can only get dirty, even during the dry season. But all in all, it's always being careful of the way you move.
Just move in a way that they will not get dirty. Where you see water or dust or mud, you don't pass there.
I have to make sure that at least I move with a cloth or a handkerchief, so that any time they are dirty, or if I'm moving from my hostel to the lecture room, by the time I reach the lecture room, I have something to clean my shoes.
If I have only one pair of shoes, I'll be putting on it for a short while. I go clean it immediately, either by washing or brushing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Council of Ministers in Jonglei State passed a resolution this week to reinstate teachers dismissed last year after they walked off the job to protest low pay and poor working conditions. The teachers welcomed the move, even though most of their grievances have not been addressed. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
A year ago, former Jonglei State Minister of Education, Susan Lina Luong, dismissed 11 primary and secondary school teachers believed to be the ringleaders of the teachers' strike. Jonglei State Information Minister Akeny Dengdi says the State Council of Ministers reversed that decision on Monday and says the government will find ways to address the teachers' demand despite financial challenges.
The teachers confirm, and the Minister of Education was instructed to reinstate the teachers which were expelled last year.
Dengdi urged the teachers and their colleagues to commit to improving the level of learning in schools across the state.
The government of Jonglei State want to look into any possible way to make sure the teachers have a better salary so that their own families and children are also well taken care while they are giving their skill. So this is a work in process. Teachers, please, just know you are sacrificed, as others are doing, to give the best we can to this state and to this country.
Teachers are demanding a salary hike, promotions, allowances, and permanent letters of appointment. So far, the state has only agreed to increase teacher salaries. Thorn Mading, who taught at Langbar Primary School before he was sacked last year, says he is happy to be reinstated. Even though the government has yet to address many of the teachers' grievances, Mading says he is ready to return to the classroom.
The issue of money was a big problem. Now it has been there, and primary school is now okay. In Yonglei State, what we have after has been done now. It has not been achieved. Teachers are getting more than 600, of which it was not like that. But now it is more than that. It is 1,000 and above, so it is okay. Due to the funding from the European Union, it's also making school better.
Machar Debin Makech, a teacher who was fired from Boer Secondary School, says he is glad to be reinstated.
The issue of salary increment has no big problem. The other part will be solved by the ministry and the state government. Yeah, we have no problem, and I have no problem in particular, because what we were following is the right of majority. And if the government has reinstated us, then we can continue with our normal duty.
Boer Secondary School Principal David Leng says the government's decision to reinstate teachers is good news for his school.
One of our teachers was a teacher of agriculture. A lack of that subject try with others to get part-timers, so they replace them. But permanent appointed teacher is better than part-timer, because even we don't have money for part-timers.
Leng says pupils and teachers at Boer Secondary School will be celebrating Machar's return to the school. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Boer.
Today, Americans are celebrating Thanksgiving. It's a day set aside for families, feasting and expression of gratitude for all the prosperity and goodness in their lives. VOA's Adam Phillips took to the streets of New York to ask people what they are thankful for this Thanksgiving Day.
It's a brisk and sunny afternoon in Manhattan's Morningside Heights neighborhood, and 5-year-old Ariana is clear about what she'll be grateful for this Thanksgiving Day.
I'm grateful for my teachers and all the things in the world that are, like, excellent. School is one, my family, my food, like, everything that's really important.
Are you happy for friends, too?
Well, yes, I am, because friends are a part of important things.
At a nearby cafe, Columbia University student Kate Anthony echoes Ariana's thoughts.
I'm really grateful for my friends. I just moved and started a new graduate program, and I think I'm grateful both for the new friends that I've made who have become so close so fast, and also for the friends who helped me figure out that going to school was the right thing to do. I'm grateful for my community.
Ioana Manoladaki is a Greek set and costume designer who's visiting her family in New York for the holiday. She paints gratitude in even broader strokes.
I'm grateful for my whole life, for the love I have received all through, for my excellent family, and my power to create good things to make people happy. I'm grateful for my teachers, who taught me a lot, and my students, who also taught me a lot. And I'm grateful for being able to understand people and forgive. And this, I think, is the essence of true freedom and happiness.
What is the relationship between gratitude and blessing?
You cannot separate one from the other. I mean, I always feel that my gratitude gives me back a blessing.
Outside the Beacon Theater, Joe DiCapua would be grateful to be blessed with a last-minute ticket to the Bob Dylan concert that's about to start. He takes a moment to share some seasonal thoughts. So what are you grateful for at this moment?
My health, the weather, something to eat, a place to stay. Things are pretty calm right now.
You're grateful for those things, huh?
Yeah. And I'm grateful for Bob Dylan, absolutely. That I was born at a time that he's alive too. And that comes from the heart.
Miriam Winicore knows all about the heart this Thanksgiving.
Specifically, I'm having a little love affair at the moment, which is very enjoyable. And that's making me joyful and grateful and thankful. To tell you the truth, I'm 70 and he's 63. So I feel like, oh, I'm robbing the cradle. And then in general, I'm thankful that I have more than many other people do, and I'm concerned about others who don't.
Michael Richards is a homeless man who recently moved to New York. One might assume that he has little to be thankful for, but
I'm grateful that I still have another day to make things better, to keep going strong and keep pushing on and trying to survive. That's what I'm grateful for, that the Lord has given me another day each day. Even though my situation is not the best situation and I have no place to stay, I still know that I'm blessed.
Rich Orloff is thankful for a career that feeds both body and soul.
I write plays, and I've been writing plays for about 30 years, and I just feel enormously lucky and grateful that I've had the chance to follow my dream. I'm aware of how many people don't get to do that. To me, gratitude is the opposite of taking things for granted. So whether it's my health, my friends, or even, I think, ultimately life itself, I want to appreciate it. I want to recognize how extraordinary these gifts are.
And it may be that thankfulness pays back better. As one man put it, expressing gratitude is guaranteed to make that roast turkey taste even better. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Traditional chiefs meeting in Juba are trying to reduce the practice of child marriages, which they say contributes to the high rate of maternal mortality in South Sudan. The chiefs say the conflict and continuing economic crisis in the country has only increased the practice. More than 60 chiefs from across South Sudan are gathered in the capital to try to figure out ways to end child marriages, which they say are rooted in cultural practices. The UN Population Fund and the South Sudan Human Rights Commission organized today's meeting. Both groups say child marriages happen mainly in rural areas, and they say getting chiefs involved is the best way to reduce the practice. The meeting is being organized as part of 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. A class of 100 female police officers and correctional officers graduated today from a six-month course in English literacy and computer science provided by the UN Development Program. A police official says the new cadets will help narrow the gender gap in the country's National Police Service. Andrew Shiruma, team leader for the UNDP's Democratic Governance Campaign, says the training is aimed at enhancing the capacity of the rule of law institutions in South Sudan. And finally, the Jonglei State Council of Ministers passed a resolution this week to hire back teachers fired last year after they walked off the job to protest low pay and other things. The teachers welcome the move, even though most of their grievances have not been met. A year ago, the former Jonglei State Minister of Education dismissed 11 primary and secondary school teachers believed to be the ringleaders of the teachers' strike. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Longonyo by Colonel Mido.
Guru shuta kidema mido funita ya sabi. Guru shuta kidema bodita visa mae. Saidu masakine. Saidu akwana kulwe, Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe. Guru shuta kidema bidofunita ya sabi, Guru shuta kidema bodita fisamae, Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe. Saidu masakine. Hey yakwana, ainu takum lokuluku. Makalam gurush rasto biga kebin. Makalam gurush biga mabisele munasisika. Aba halkulu makalam gurush. Ah lokuluku.
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Longonyo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We would like to hear what you think about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on the Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kanita junubie walata munukurwe kanita